Item number five, report and possible discussion on pension advisor report by ANCO Consulting LLC, presented by David Thompson, Chief Financial Officer.
And what I'll do is turn it over to Tony.
Thank you, David.
On the left. I've got it. There you go.
Can I make that a little smaller?
Which one of these two are we going through?
So we're going through the report that says executive summary report, period ending December 31st, 2021. So again, this is the quarterly review, and we put obviously four of these together a year. This one happens to take us through December 31st, so I get a full year look back period. And you can see, and I'll go through kind of the highlights of the report, but as we kind of joked about, obviously, 2021 was a great year for the markets. The S&P 500 was up almost 30% for 2021. So stocks did it very, very good during the year. That marked three consecutive calendar years where the S&P 500 has been up double-digit rates of return. Unfortunately, there's no record on history of the S&P 500 being up four consecutive calendar years by double digits. So it looks to be so far, in January and February into March, it's a long shot that we'll see that kind of double-digit rate of return out of the S&P 500 again. But as we've talked about, it's a long-term plan. We expect there to be fluctuation and volatility. That's why we have a diversified portfolio. We'll get into that in a few moments. But certainly we were able to capture a lot of what the market has presented to us over the last year or 2 years. To that point, you can see the total portfolio walk forward for the full year. So had a beginning balance of $23.6 million. David covered the contribution and distribution activity and fees and expenses for the plan. Income on the total portfolio, so out of dividends and your fixed income investments, $1 million. And then the assets appreciated $2.8 million, ending at that really that all-time year-end high of $26.4 million for the pension planning. So what did that mean in performance terms? So for the quarter, total portfolio is up 5%. Fiscal year-to-date performance, up double digits at 14%. And then you can see really strong 1 year performance, up 16.7%. Again, that's net of fees, including the underlying investment management fees that the underlying portfolio managers charge. So really good return, again, considering that the portfolio is diversified to other assets like fixed income and real estate. We'll talk about that in a few moments. You can see 3-5 years, double-digit rates of return, and then you go out to 7 years, up 8%. So again, over the last year, when you think about what drove that 16.7, yes?
I was going to let you finish. So what's the industry standard in those numbers?
So I'll show a peer universe rank, but okay, there's really no industry standard, because if you think about your return goals here for a closed plan versus an open plan, candidly, there's certain asset classes that a $1 billion-plus plan can invest in that you're not able to invest in at this asset level. But we do try to show kind of what other public pension plans did, and you're above the average for that. And we'll show that in a few moments. We have some good data on that. Kind of going to that 1 year performance though, the equity composite, we talked about that part of the portfolio, 21%. So good gains. And we'll talk about the asset allocation here in a few moments. But again, even though the plan is closed, we have a long-term horizon here, decades and decades. So we need return-seeking assets, i.e. stocks in the portfolio, to make sure we're giving ourselves the best chance to hit that 6.5% assumed rate of return. So, I think at the end of the day, all the numbers are important, but we have to hit that 6.5% rate of return, right, to continue to maintain funded status of payments. So this starts to get into the question that you just asked about the peer universe rank. Before that, we have two goals, and really as we're talking about these today, these have really been, I would say, implicit goals. We've always put them in this quarterly report, but I shouldn't say we always have. For the last 5 or 6 years, we have. We'll get to an agenda item in a few moments, which is the investment policy statement, but we'd actually like to formalize the goals for the portfolio going forward to kind of bring you into industry standard there. So goal number one, that really will stay the same, and I just touched on this, right? We have to hit that 6.5% rate of return over the long term. And over the last 5 years, the portfolio has done that, almost doubling the actuarial assumed rate of return by generating 11% rate of return. So goal number two, be in the top 50th percentile compared to the peer median universe. Peer rank, we achieved that top half of the peer universe. And this is the one where I would say going forward, although we call it a peer universe, there's really no peer, right? There's one Brazos River Authority that's a closed plan that has 300 active participants with a 6.5% discount rate. This peer universe represents close to 700 public plans across the country. So again, it could be the TMRS and the TCDRS plan, which has a different return target, different makeup, different portfolio, different asset classes. But this is just to give you kind of a sense of where the portfolio is returned. We think going forward, the better comparison is versus your actual benchmark, which is how much do we have in stocks? How much do we have in fixed income? Did the portfolio that was constructed outperform a similarly weighted benchmark? So,
and you might, and that 6.5 is real conservative for where we are in place and time.
It
so
is.
So that we don't end up with some ginormous City of Houston style unfunded liability.
Back up to the slide before and show them on the 5 year. The 5 year benchmark is what we're trying to move towards, which is really the performance of the portfolio in a different asset categories, as opposed to this goal, which Tony and I decided just didn't really make sense for us to have. But we'll cover that in another agenda item. But I just want to point this out here so we don't have to come all the way back to this slide on that one.
And the full quarterly reporting that we do, it will still have all of that information, the peer universe ranks. You can see that over different time periods. It's just not something that we think it should be a focal point for you all, given, again, the unique structure and circumstances of your portfolio. So page 5 of the report, this is an important page. This shows our overall asset allocation. This is really, at the end of the day, what we lean on to give ourselves the best chance of hitting that 6.5% rate of return on an ongoing basis. Very diversified portfolio. This ties into the investment policy statement. So the third column, you can see our target to each of the major asset classes. So starting with equity, large cap equity, of a 30% target to large cap stocks, 10% to small mid cap, another 15% to international. So roughly 55% of the portfolio in stocks. Again, trying to achieve long-term higher rates of return. Diversified though, we have fixed income, fairly stable and conservative at 25% of the portfolio. So as we're kind of moving into this year and markets are getting more volatile, that's really the part of the portfolio that we're leaning on to preserve purchasing power, to kind of stabilize returns. So we do think fixed income, even though rates are pretty low, does continue to serve a meaningful role in the portfolio. GTAA, that stands for Global Tactical Asset Allocation, kind of a fancy marketing term, I guess, for that asset class, really kind of a go-anywhere fund. So it invests in fixed income, it invests in global equities, both U.S. and domestic, obviously. So that's really the part of the portfolio that the manager can tactically allocate to where they're seeing opportunities. So right now, shifting away from some of the geopolitical concerns that are going on in the world. So I think as you think about the portfolio, right, and how often we meet, it would be hard for us to make tactical decisions, right? Come in every month and say, now we want to have this much in Europe. Now we want to have this much in fixed income. We try to take a long-term approach, given the long-term nature of the assets and the liability here. But we do want to have one piece where we offer the manager some flexibility to capitalize on some of these market gyrations, if you will. And then real estate, target at 10% as well. Having a lot of conversations with clients right now about inflation, appropriately so. This is an area of the portfolio that, in addition to income and capital appreciation, as inflation has become a topic of conversation, this is an area where if you think about real estate, not fun if you're, you know, a tenant paying higher apartment prices, but we get some of that benefit, right, as the end owner of those types of real estate assets. So this is managed very closely. You'll see minimum and maximum ranges to the allocations here. And this is where we work with David, staff, and the team at Principal on a monthly basis. Anytime there is cash flow needs, i.e. benefit payments, we look at the portfolio and we say, what area is overweight? So what part of the portfolio is appreciated faster than others? And we look to that asset class to help fund those benefit payments. So I bring that up because that's really one of the best levers that we have to reduce risk in the portfolio. So what have we been doing for the last 12 and 18 months? Up until recently, we've been pulling assets away from equity. So if you see our large cap and small cap, we're only 1% overweighted to equities because we've taken money off the table. We've taken those profits to make benefit payments. I think the natural inclination a lot of times, right? Last year it would have felt pretty good. Hey, we were just up 20% in equities. Let's let that run. Well, if we would have done that, fast forward to this quarter, we're not feeling so good about that because markets are now down, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8%. So that's really kind of the embedded risk mitigation technique that we have.
Did you do that because you anticipated that the market would be down?
I wish I was that way. I wish I was that way. Exactly. And we lined that out in the investment policy statement, so it takes that emotion off the table.
It's simply balancing the asset.
It really is. Yeah.
And also, what is an example of fixed income, just so I get it straight in mind?
Yeah, bonds. So, yeah, we have a few different fixed income managers, but it's everything from, more
it's a deposit or
could be treasury bills, government bonds, yeah, could be corporate bonds. It's really pretty diversified, and we have different areas that serve different roles in the fixed income portfolio, everything from safe, secure, AAA rated to even below investment grade.
We're a little bit on the upside on that, is it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's held in quite nicely for us.
And that sounds to me like you were anticipating.
I wish.
Take credit.
I wish. No, it doesn't always work out that way. So.
Honest now, and honest later.
Exactly. We try to be, transparent in the fees that we're paying. These are really implicit fees, I guess you would say. So for the portfolio, most of the investments are made via mutual funds. So daily liquid mutual funds, fees are embedded in the mutual funds in an expense ratio. We show those to you here. Can we make the, actually you can see the bottom row, never mind, sorry. So this is something that we track closely. You'll see when we talk about a new investment here in a few moments that we look at fees closely as well. And always consider that. So bottom row here, total expenses paying to the underlying investment manager is a little bit less than 0.5%. If you went back in time, you know, one of the major shifts that we made back in 2017, 2018, third manager or second manager down there is the Vanguard 500 Index Fund. We replaced an active large cap manager that was charging close to 1%, replaced that manager with a manager charging 0.05%, I should say. And that really drove down the fees. So at one time, the total portfolio fee was close to 81 basis points. Now we're at that less than 0.5%. So that move and a few other moves alone saving the portfolio about $92,000 a year in investment expenses.
And we, Tony, the Vanguard funds fees change from fund to fund to fund to fund. They're not consistent across.
Correct. Yeah. This is one of the lowest cost Vanguard funds out there. Correct.
Because there's no management involved.
Yep. They're replicating an index. Exactly.
And we do look a couple of times a year just to make sure that all of these, if there's not something else out there a little cheaper, And so we're doing due diligence on that piece of it.
Yeah, it's a good point. Fidelity now offers an index fund that's a little bit cheaper than this, but to move into that new fund, you'd have to sell out of the market, sell out of this fund, let that trade settle, and then repurchase the Fidelity fund. So the market could move 1-2% in that time period, could go down, and you'd love that you're out of the market, but could go up, and you know the 2 basis points that you might be saving on that fee have been completely wiped out for 20 years.
What the Fed's going to do with interest is an interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Market timing never
worked. No, it never worked. No. I don't know what the war is going to do to the Fed.
Yeah, they certainly have backed away.
I think they're going to raise.
You and me both, yeah. I think Powell signaled that at least this week, expect a 25 basis point increase, but you know, they had talked about 4 or 5 federal rate increases this year. I think they're pretty quickly backing off of that, given all the...
That 25% basis will knock down your current stock, I mean, current bond holdings, I would think.
Well, and I think so, yes, but some of that's already been priced in, right? The market's forward-looking, so the anticipation has been that rates are going to rise. So if you looked at bond returns last year, bonds actually lost money last year, and the prospect for interest rate hike. So people are already kind of pricing that in and moving portfolios. So actually that's maybe a good segue for your portfolio and our fixed income discussion. So this is page 7 of the report. And I'd ask you to look at the total fixed income line, which is 3 from the bottom there. And this goes to the point. So we show a benchmark and we show your portfolio, your fixed income portfolio. Your fixed income portfolio is the bold, black bold, and the gray bar there. So for the year, it was up 2.74%. Doesn't sound like a lot, and it really isn't. But the average bond benchmark last year was actually lost money, going back to your point about interest rates. So interest rates going up, downward pressure on bond prices. So the portfolio has been constructed really to try to help take advantage of some of that. And that's one of the agenda items that we have for consideration later today. So we've moved out of some asset classes, we've moved out of some fixed income investments that are really dictated by interest rates. And we have exposure to fixed income securities that have floating rates that actually benefit when interest rates go up, the coupon payments or the income that the bond manager is receiving goes up in line with the interest rate. So there are ways to mitigate some of that fixed income risk, but certainly it's a challenge for us. And again, you think about the portfolio, right? We're trying to earn 6.5%. You know, what's a 30-year U.S. Treasury paying right now? 2%. So we know traditional fixed income is not going to get us there alone. Certainly would be great. We get back to an environment where interest rates are a lot higher. We can put more of the portfolio in kind of traditional fixed income and clip that coupon. But in the meantime, we're not quite there yet.
So, back up for 1 second.
Yes, sir.
I just want to make sure. If you look at the 5-year, that's we're an agenda coming up that we're talking about moving to measure instead of using the quartile, the 46-50% quartile. We're talking about looking at how each of these categories are performing. So, and Tony and I feel like that's probably a better measurement than what we were using before. So when it comes up, I just want to keep in mind that's what we're talking about going forward.
Yeah, if you look at the 5-year number, right, it's that 11.12%. That's net what your portfolio returned. The benchmark is that blue line right below there, the policy. And that would be if you just allocated to the indexes for the asset classes that you all invested. Does that make sense? So instead of having active managers trying to outperform a benchmark, it would just be, okay, we're only going to invest in the fixed income benchmark. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad. You would have lost, you know, 1.29% last year. The benchmark is what the benchmark is. That's the return you get. So really, what that number shows you is those fees that we're paying, that you all are paying, that the plan is paying to investment managers, are you being compensated for that? Because the alternative would be just to go in all index funds across the board.
Thanks, Tony.
You got it.
Any other questions?
I do want to show one more thing because this goes to the question. So this is, I think, a helpful page. Even though we're going away from talking about this every quarter, it's still going to be in every quarterly report. And this is page 8 of 19. So this goes back to that public fund universe that I was talking about. So I'm looking at the chart on the left-hand side. Your portfolio is the blue dot. That gray dot is the policy benchmark that we were just talking about that we're trying to beat over longer term. That's if you're just indexed. And then the shaded blue columns for each time period, that shows the range of returns for public plans across the universe. So the median public plan for the last 5 years was up 11%. Your portfolio is up 11.2%. So that's where that 50th percentile comes into play. But you can see a consistent trend here, you know, really over all time periods, even short-term time periods, and we want to focus on the longer-term time periods because you get a lot of volatility short-term, but you see a consistent trend where your blue dot, the portfolio, is above the policy benchmark, which is good, net of fees, and you're at the top of that peer universe. So even though we have a lower return hurdle than a lot of other open plans out there, we still have a good diversified mix of assets, and the overall portfolio has done quite nicely. But you can see, yeah, from the quarter, you know, it wasn't uncommon for funds to almost earn nothing in this most recent quarter, given fixed income markets. So sorry, I know that sometimes is a lot. We normally go into that much detail, but thought it would be helpful this quarter.
So are you trying to end agenda item number 5 with that, or do you still have more to go?
I'll end with that.
Just trying to make sure I'm on the right page.
Can we skip? Is the next agenda item come up, or do you have that detail report? Just to see.
All right. Any more questions on the pension advisor report by ANSCO?
Let's go to the next agenda.